Welcome to the EDM Producer Podcast. This is the show where we interview successful EDM and any type of music producers. With the idea is to help you guys out there become better producers yourselves, create better music, get it out there and get it heard. Today, we have three guests joining us from the group Brothers. It's Aaron, Nathan, and Ryan. And we're super happy to have them because they have, if you've checked them out, they have a really cool history that we're going to dig into. And I think they have a lot to offer anybody out there who wants to make it in the music industry, in the music field. So first off, guys, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks.
Totally. I guess I'll just ask you generally, you know, if anybody goes on your socials and digs into your history a little bit, they can see that you have a history. You were originally one band name, and then you guys changed and you got more into EDM, it looks like, from more just traditional music. But tell us a little bit about just your history and what you're doing, what kind of music you're doing.
Well, we started in classical piano, the three of us growing up, going through all that, and eventually wanted to write our own stuff. So we became a garage band, as most bands start out. And so we wrote in the garage alternative rock music. We were a band called Menu for about 20 years, touring and performing and writing albums. And then getting into the EDM stuff, we were in Europe doing with some friends and doing some appearances. And we stumbled into some of these dance clubs, and the vibes were just amazing there, and the energy in the room and stuff. And we actually we were with Bono from U2 at this dance club, and we got into conversation about just how if somebody was able to take the rock world and bring it into this dance world together,
what that would be like,
yeah, in a live setting almost. So what we kind of do now is we really perform EDM music, not as DJs, but actually performing it live. So we just, it all came kind of from that conversation we had with him.
I love that. And yeah, if you check out your videos, it's very cool how your stage setup is. It's like you have keyboards, you have electronic drums and singing. And that's neat. I'm so into that. But I don't want to just gloss over how you were just hanging out with Bono at the club. You know what I'm saying?
Is that what we did? We just glossed
over. Well, just casually. We just casually like, oh yeah, we just, I know, that right? That day we were hanging out with Bono. So
it was a big deal for us. We don't want to downplay it. I mean,
they are
an important band to us for sure. They're one of the reasons we started a band. So it was a surreal experience, but yeah, he was there. I think Noel Gallagher was there. Like, it was just nuts, like some of the people we were running into. So wow. We were just with some friends that were in the club and knew these guys. And
we have a bit of a history with U2 as well, because early on in our career, we were invited to play on stage at the arena in Toronto with U2. And that kind of helped us start and
kind of kickstarted our
really was like such an amazing experience. And and then years later at this club in south of France, we met up again with them and
talked about that time, and
they remembered.
Wow, that's really cool. How far are you guys separated in age?
2 years.
Yeah.
2 years roughly. Each? Neat. Yeah. When did you guys start like being a band as kids?
We used to hold concerts in our parents' living room, made cardboard instruments and kind of played along to Traveling Wilburys and the Beatles. We sold tickets for like 5 cents. And held concerts and live.
It was really when we decided to get the drums. I think we're like, Ryan wanted to be the drummer initially.
Well, I built it up in my head for years that the drums were the best thing ever. And then I would make all types of kick drums out of cardboard for sound, different sounds and stuff. Yeah. And then the first day we got the drum set, I sat on the real set and I hit it a few times and was like, I don't know if I like it. Literally, it was like 10 years of just dreaming about it. And then, like, literally, one day totally changed everything. Then Nate sat on the kit the next day. And yeah, never ever went back on the kit. It's kind of a weird thing, but and then I went to keyboards and stayed on keyboards.
But I think I was about 14 when we started. So, and I'm the youngest. So yeah.
And drums just fit for you.
Yeah, I could do the first drum roll, so I got the job. Yeah.
Plus, his body type is just a little better because on keyboard he's a little more muscular and he's the short one in the band. Like,
at 6'1".
Yeah, he's 6'1", but me and Aaron, we're like the Twin Towers. And then Nate is the shorter one, which isn't really that short, but he just looked better on the drum set. Like,
he looked
better. They make me look short. I looked like the short, stocky guy standing next to them on the set.
Well, if you were on the synthesizers, you would be, you just look like you would crush them.
Probably. Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, same kind of thing happens with any, like Van Halen. They didn't start off on those instruments, you know, and I think weren't both of those classically piano trained too, or at least Eddie was, I thought. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, no, all three of us were trained on the piano first, which I think was a good like starting base for just kind of all instruments, right? You're dealing with rhythms and melodic together, melody and rhythms and intervals and all that, right? So you got a good sense of...
Clearly, I was the better one because I actually had to stay on
it. Well, you are better now, for sure. You're
better. All right, so how did you go from, you know, having 5-cent ticket concerts at home to, you know, getting to a point where U2 asks you to open for them or come on stage with them? Like, what was that journey like?
Well, it went from 5-cent to 10-cent. Yada, yada, yada.
I mean, I think it's just like building your repertoire of music, writing, learning to write properly, structurally, as a band even, just and then just kind of getting different opportunities that come up by being ready for them. We always say like there is a certain amount of luck in music, but you have to be prepared for that.
You have to be ready.
Those opportunities. You have to be ready to perform when you need to make people notice you. So, and then we came out with like our early album, we came out with a song called This Isn't Real and a video we shot, that got some notoriety, and Letterman Booker saw it. We were getting some good traction online and they booked us for the show, and that really kind of kickstarted us.
I see.
Yeah, in the national television world. And
but it was a lot of touring. It was a lot of playing shows, and
a lot of practice.
Lot of writing.
Was that before or after Letterman? You're talking about the touring and
leading up to it and after. Okay. Like,
we still practice writing, learning all the time, right? You never stop.
I see.
Like,
how did that video, what did you do with your video to make it get attention? That original video that got the attention of like the Letterman book.
I'm trying to think. It was a long time ago.
Did you just put it out there possibly? Or did you like put money behind it?
We put it on YouTube. We did some promotion. I think we had a PR company we hired in the U.S. at the time.
We were doing a lot of shows also. Like, I mean, I remember we were touring in New York City a bit too.
So yeah.
I think some of those people probably also said, I think they came out to a show at some point.
We got some press going on it. We had a management at the time that probably sent it around to a bunch of places. I mean, it's just a combination of all these things working together. You really don't know what works.
Right.
What's the best way, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you try everything.
No, it's good. It worked. And to be able to play all these gigs in New York, like how were you guys getting gigs? Were you like going into places and saying, this is us, here's our CD, or what were you doing?
I mean, at first you're sometimes paying to get on bill, like on placement for those gigs, right? And then eventually you can play if you bring a certain amount of people in. Like there's usually sometimes you got to bring 75 people in. I mean, that often was in LA or whatever, Viper Room, we'd play a lot, but you'd have to bring in amount of people.
And if you didn't, you'd have to pay for the ones that didn't show up.
Wow.
At least that's how it worked when we were starting. Yeah. So.
But you act confident always.
Cocky always.
Even though there's maybe nothing to back it up with. Yeah. And then you just hope for the best.
You're just like,
yeah. Oh yeah, no problem. We can easily get 100 people in, no problem. And then you worry about how you're going to do it later.
Well, that's good.
There is a story, like when we were years ago, when we were looking for the right producer for some of the rock stuff, Rick Parrisher, he was a big producer, like grunge producer. Like he did Pearl Jam 10 and all that.
Some iconic albums.
Yeah, really big albums and stuff. So at the time we wanted Rick to maybe do a demo with us, and we didn't know him or his management. Like the problem is,
and he lives in Seattle.
He lives in Seattle. We're in Toronto, and a lot of these people are so protected by their agents and managers.
Yeah,
and with enough confidence and just like craziness, we were like, let's go to Seattle.
We set up a meeting through his agent.
Yeah,
just to meet with them first.
Because acted like we had all the resources to pay him top dollar like Universal would or something. So we show up and we're like, but it doesn't matter. Let's just get in a room. We'll sell it to him when we see him.
Yeah.
And then he'll want to do it for free. So we show up in Seattle, we meet him and we hang out a bit, and then we actually hit it off. And
it was so much fun.
Very stressful though, because we knew by the end of the night we had to break it to him
that we had no money
and can he help us out and do this demo. And literally, by the end of the night we're playing pool with him and all this, and literally we had to give him the question and ask him. Yeah. We said, look, we really don't have money. And then he actually said, okay, let's do it. So
Wow.
And things like that. So
super nice.
It takes a lot of confidence and kind of balls and stupidness too.
Yeah.
That's a great lesson, man. You have to be, I guess you got to be risky and ballsy and confident. It's a great thing.
Teenagers where we're like, we would do anything. Like, I don't know if we would do that kind of stuff now anymore. Right. We're mellowed out too much. But we would like rent cranes and host concerts and build a stage and lift the concerts outside of record companies and try to get their attention and just crazy stuff that we would do.
We built a stage, got an engineer to do up the drawings for a stage that we wanted to lift from a crane. And so we built this stage and
rented a
flatbed transport truck to bring it downtown Toronto and hired the crane company, and they came and lifted us into the air, and we played a show in the sky.
We had like
just to get attention.
Yeah, like it was so illegal. Like we had friends dressed in construction uniforms putting pylons out. Like it was just nuts. It was nuts when you think about it now. Like
I love
it. It sounds expensive, but we've always been kind of builders, so. No, like literally we built the stage. So it sounds like we had it.
No, we actually built it.
But yeah, we built it, and
that was awesome. I can't believe they let you do it. That's the thing I can't believe.
It's the confidence behind it, though. Just like being like, it's
making it look organized. Like you had the permits to do it, and the cops didn't even bother. I think that one guy was just watching the show. Like it was just.
Oh, we had all the construction stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. That's a great story, man. These are good lessons. Let's get a little more into like some like
maybe
technical
I don't know what to do
musical stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a question. I got a question for Aaron. Did you train vocally, or did you just practice and now you could sing like that?
It was a lot of practice because, yeah. I mean, vocals, it's a muscle. So, I mean, if you work it out enough, you can do it. There were a couple of times like leading up to albums where I would get some vocal lessons just to brush up on like breathing stuff before we go into like recording an entire album, which is quite intense vocally.
Yeah, we would do those exercises live too.
Yeah, and before shows, we would do those exercises because it's a lot of work.
It does help for sure to do the proper exercises.
Yeah.
Were you guys playing like gigs every day and you needed to like really protect your voice on? Or
Yeah. We would do tours with like some big bands and you'd have shows.
The worst thing was when you would, someone would get like a bad cold and then, like maybe the band that you're touring with or one of the members, and then it would be so stressful trying to protect the voice because it was super,
there was a few times where we got colds and we had to play. And, but I remember one time we were playing a big show at the Whiskey Go-Go in LA, and we were right before the show, like Nate and I had no voice. And we just, our grandmother's remedy was always brandy. So we had a shot of brandy on stage and it got us through the show.
Yeah. Just sipping it up between every song, trying to keep your,
it warms like instantly warms your vocal cords and opens.
That's an interesting remedy. All right. I bet lots of people are going to try that now.
Just not too much. You can't be like physically unable to play or perform.
Right. And then Nate, how did you transition from the acoustic drums to the electronic? Like, how did you pick that set that you use on the stage? And does that cover all the drums you need?
Yeah, I mean, initially, in some of our later albums as Menu, doing the rock stuff, I got the electronic drums because, I don't know, it was getting interesting to me to kind of mix the two together. And even still with the EDM stuff, we mix the acoustic with the electronic a bit.
I see.
But the setup was difficult because we had done all this electronic stuff in the studio performing, and you know, you can do tracks kind of, you know, you lay down some tracks, bass, and then you can add layers, right? But then when you're going to perform it live, you have to come up with how you're going to do it, right? So the main thing was, the hardest transition for me was standing up while playing the drums for the EDM stuff. So my one leg is basically just a tripod holding me up, and I'm using my foot to do the kick and all the electronic stuff together. It was just a kind of a transition that was necessary to make it kind of work live.
I see. Do you do any looping on your drums, or is it all live every hit?
There is some looping that I will trigger, or Ryan will trigger on the keys. He has some loops that he uses as well.
I see. Yeah.
Neat. But it's mostly all the main drum stuff is performed fully.
That's cool. Yeah. Well done. And then Ryan, on the synths, are you using hardware synthesizers? Or are you guys like plugged into a laptop running like Ableton Live and plugins or something like that? How does that work for you?
So one of the setups where we actually took
it's a MIDI nightmare.
Yeah, I know. We always reference it because it was a few years ago, and it was like just a moment that, I mean, me and Nate were about to kill ourselves and all the gear, because we literally took a piano, like a upright Yamaha, like acoustic piano, and we completely like stripped it down to just the keys and the strings and stuff. And then we put a ton of MIDI cables and wiring in it, and wired in all these like controllers and pedals and keyboards into it, and it was insane. Like, and we made it all mirror and glass and stuff, which just made it even crazier. But that was crazy. But most of the stuff we do is we try to take like analog keyboards and just put actually like real guitar pedals into, run it through the lines. So literally, I have like big muffs and all this stuff running through the actual keyboard. I have some racks that I use, but mainly it's actually the like
he has MS 2000 that he uses.
Yeah, but then I run like five different guitar pedals through it too, and then I can really make it dirty or loop it or something like that.
Right. So and you're just running only a few loops. Then you guys aren't running like into Ableton or anything. You're just playing it live.
Yeah, I know. We try to we found over the years if you add too many tracks, you literally start losing the most important tracks. So it's better to really know the main hooks and loops you want, and then really try to preserve them and not almost destroy them. So it is cool when you can add a few layers in there, but like really try to keep it
simple.
Yeah, it's simple. If you can say it more simple, then don't get more complicated, because it takes away more than gives.
Gotcha. So. That's good. I like that. So when you guys are in the studio and recording, how does that process work? Is one of you guys the engineers, or do you hire somebody separate? How do you make your songs and get them mixed?
So I can engineer somewhat, like basic engineering. I can put tracks down if we have ideas and we want to throw it in Pro Tools is what we use.
Okay.
And we can do that. But if we're going to get into a real session, no, we want to focus on the music, on the writing, on the,
and the playing.
Sounds. We want to, in the playing of it, we have engineers we use, and our producer for the EDM stuff, Mark Underdown, he does most of our stuff now. So
I see. All right, cool.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our listeners, they make really good stuff. They just don't know how to get it out there and get heard. So what would your advice be for somebody who's reached your level to take somebody who hasn't even released anything yet? They know they have good stuff and they want to get it out there. What would your advice be for them to start to get their stuff out and get heard?
Run away. No, it's hard. No, it's really hard.
Especially now. Like, I mean, there's so many avenues you can get your music out there, which also is a bad thing because it waters it down.
It's hard.
You don't know where to look for it because there's too many options.
Yeah, it's like the internet is great and a new thing that everyone can get their music out there and everyone can hear it, but it's oversaturated too. So there's just so much. It's a totally different world now. I think getting it online, obviously, doing some promotion is always good. I mean, we still hire PR companies to get the word out, to get, to get interviews and placements online. Placement in TV and film is a huge thing still. If you can get your music on TV shows, we have had a lot of success in that.
Yes. That's like, can we go into that for a second? Because that is interesting. Yeah. I was talking to somebody about that today, actually. What's that process like? So, okay, say they don't want to be like playing stadiums and being a DJ and like playing the crowds. They just want to get their music onto like TV and movies and stuff like that. What would they do for that?
Yeah. Well, there's music supervisors that you can reach out to these companies and send your stuff to, and they archive your stuff. And it's more about building relationships with them and different film producers and stuff like that. Like, we've over the years gotten to know some of them. And then when they have a spot, like, they don't always have a spot that works, but when they have a spot, you're just in their radar, and you're just,
I see,
you know, you're in the back of their head, and they go, oh yeah, this will work. So
I see.
It's, yeah, it's more about just kind of constantly updating them with what you're doing and what your new stuff is, and keeping their interest in their archive, because they go through so much music all the time. Yeah, so
I can imagine.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. Good stuff. What I'd like to ask you guys, and I do this a lot on the show, is I'd like to go through each one by one, and if each one of you guys could tell me the most either crazy or amazing thing that has happened to you in your career so far, like something that stands out that you go, I got to tell this story. Let's start with Ryan.
Let's go the other way. We're going the other way.
Okay. Okay. We don't have to start with a specific person. What popped into any of your heads when I asked the question?
Too much pressure. I mean, one of the most amazing things for me as a drummer was playing with you two, but particularly playing Larry Mullen's drums. And when he hands me over his sticks, I mean, I looked up to him for so long as a drummer, and to be there, and I still have his sticks, and for him to give me his sticks and to play a set, even though it was set up all wrong to me, was just an amazing experience that, yeah, I would never forget for sure.
My mind's the same as that. Same.
The same with watching the keyboards?
Watching me.
Watching him.
And getting his sticks given to you. That's the best part.
Yeah, Aaron, yours can't be watching Ryan watch Nate. Any other stories you guys thought of, or something amazing?
There's a bunch, like,
yeah,
through our entire career, there's always been highs that come along and lows, and that's like anyone's career. But I mean, some of the highlights were playing on Letterman. That was amazing, in the Ed Sullivan Theater, and
the writing on the wall.
Yeah, everyone, all the artists have signed the back wall around the loading dock, yeah. And
to put our name up there was pretty cool. Yeah.
It was pretty cool. Amazing. And
like Bowie's up there. Like, it's just crazy.
But yeah.
But it ranges. You get like moments like that are amazing. I know we sometimes we laugh and talk about moments like just simple ones too, that just being in the van together, driving wherever, and watching like a movie or something. And we always joke, because during one of the tours, we were obsessed with, do you know MacGruber? You know, with Will Forte, he does this spin-off of MacGyver.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's called
yeah.
MacGruber.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a movie he did a few years ago. One of the tours, we were obsessed with it. So we watched it literally almost every day on like tour, just to laugh, and like it got funnier every time, and like just that alone was really funny.
Yeah, those experiences are awesome. You're in the middle of nowhere in the desert, and you're with your brothers, and you're driving, and it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so I think we've seen every state except Alaska. We turned down the show because it was too far.
Oh, and really?
Maybe yeah. Hawaii. Like, we've been through every state in the U.S. so and Canada as well, except for maybe the Yukon and none of it.
So I mean, those experiences are amazing. Like, I mean, how many people get to the opportunity to do what they love and see
the world,
entire North America, and beyond?
Yeah,
I could totally see that.
That's awesome.
You're just sitting there, and then like you just realize, wow, I'm like kind of living a dream here.
Yeah. And we used to always, because we love to ski, so we used to always like book a few days extra where we didn't have shows, and we would stay in like Banff or Lake Tahoe or wherever we were. We would always try to.
It sounds fancy, but a lot of tours we're staying. There was one where we were actually when we were in San Francisco. I think we were doing a video and a couple of shows there, and we literally this is a funny story because, well, not at the time, but there's only enough room for one of us to sleep in our friend's boat with them because it was like a small kind of boat, houseboat. Yeah. So me and Nate were like, no, we'll sleep in the van in the parking lot. So we literally were sleeping in the van in the parking lot, and it's a black van, and we woke up in the morning. Oh, but at the same time, completely out of breath, we like were gasping for air.
The hot box.
And it would turn into like a 100-degree hot box in this parking lot. And we were like just laying there. And I remember we slowly like, I mean, we ended up, I think we were just in our
gained consciousness.
And we were so
rolled out of the sliding door.
Yeah, we literally rolled out.
And then you guys came to the boat, and I'm in the boat sipping my coffee. And I'm like, oh, good morning, guys.
typical singers.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
There's probably some rough times, too, I can imagine. And it would probably be good to go into some like times where you're like, God, guys, like, what do we do now? Like things aren't going our way or something. What did you do to get through some of the low times?
Well, we said when we're in the van and we're really hot.
I mean, there's lots of rough times. There's more rough times than the good times. The good times just make it worth going through all that tough.
I think it is like what you saying that it's like a game of golf though. Because we golf once a year, if that. And literally, it's the most frustrating thing. You're hitting balls everywhere, and it sucks most of the time.
Yeah.
But you do get that one good shot.
And
then for some reason, it keeps you going back and playing the full game. And it's kind of just like that. Exactly. Like, because you're...
Great analogy.
That is a good analogy.
Complete insanity the whole time. You don't really know why you're doing it.
It's also, I think, us keeping each other in it, motivating each other. If we didn't have each other and we were just a solo act, we probably wouldn't have made it this far at all. So, I mean, that helps to have each other.
I think that's huge. Yeah. I mean, a lot of these solo producers, because I was myself too, I feel it. And it's really tough to do it yourself, almost with anything in life. So I think it's good advice to definitely to try to find somebody who could support you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, another question I'd like to ask too is, well, if there's anything we missed, like, okay, you came on a show, you know, you're talking to like electronic music producers. Is there anything that you wanted to tell them that maybe we didn't cover yet that they definitely should know before, like to help them in their careers?
Any other, like, you love gear stuff. I mean, we can talk about some gear. we always say as producers, one of the most important thing is a good preamp, in our opinion. And a lot of the times we'll use analog preamps for that. Like we'll use Tube Tech is one of our favorite preamps. Not a lot of people have access to an SSL, but we have an SSL mixer, has great preamps on it. The Neve preamps are great too. So, I mean, I think an important thing for anything is to get a good preamp to get a good mic sound. Because after that, doesn't matter what plugin you put on it or anything, if you got that good core mic sound, everything sounds good after that. Compressors, doesn't matter. So,
are you talking just for vocals or even like putting your drums through a preamp or something?
Well, I mean, it could be drums. It could be the guitar.
Yeah.
We usually use a lot of analog gear where it's not always digital, but we record.
Right? Especially for vocals. I think the preamp's important, but because the drums, like hi-hat and stuff, it's not so critical to get an amazing preamp, but stuff you want a lot of warmth and thickness to. Yeah.
Okay.
You want to use a good preamp.
What do you use for compressors then too? For like vocal chain?
We have the
compressor
on the SSL, which is
good.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'll also use the SSL plugins for compression. We use a good Jack Joseph Pui plugin for bass stuff. He has a good
Puig Tech.
That's it. Yeah.
Are you using the keyboards mainly for bass, or are you still playing bass on the tracks, like with a guitar?
We're still playing.
Yeah, we use
like real bass guitar, and we use bass on the synthesizer
combination. So,
so when you play, when you're playing live, who plays the bass? Is it Aaron or is it Ryan?
We have a stage musician that will play bass for for some of the shows, and then whatever.
Ryan covers it.
Yeah, Ryan covers it a lot of the time
on his keyboard, or he'll start the bass, and if it's a loop, he can hit the loop and then keep going with the other bass part. But
How about effects plugins? Any special effects that you guys like maybe some reverbs or choruses or delays, anything like that that stands out that you like?
That's your guys' realm.
Well, the what is the, well, you use different ones live, but the, what is it, Eventide, the the rack. I mean, that one is like, you could do a whole movie soundtrack just with that one device. Yeah. That one is like
pretty amazing.
As far as, I mean,
what do you use on your main pedal board? You have
tons. Oh, for the guitar? Yeah. I mainly use a Gibson Les Paul with a Vox AC30. Mm-hmm. And then I have, the hot box on it, which gives it a bit of a boost in distortion and grit, and you can adjust it. And then a ton of different guitar effects like delays and reverbs
and electros. And
yeah,
that stuff gets fun. Like, this is,
and then I even run some of my vocals through guitar effects too. So, sometimes some of the songs we had two mics, so it was my main mic is a Beta 58, and then we'd run a 57 next to the 58, and then I would move back and forth, and the 57 was distorted and had reverb on it, and I would mix them as I would sing.
So it would be like a 57 and a half.
That's awesome. 57 and a half B. I know what you're talking about too, because this is an EDM show. I've been an EDM producer for like 10 years, but I got back into playing punk, so now I'm kind of where you guys are, like kind of trying to meld the two together. And I think now is the time to do that. I mean, like guitars and rock and alternative and punk is due to come back like really soon. Mm-hmm. So now that EDM is established and that stuff's coming back, I think now is the perfect time to do what you guys are doing. So I think you're in the right place.
Oh, hopefully you're right.
Yeah.
But it's exciting though, because when you can, there's no limitations. You can meld anything together, and it doesn't have to be like
one genre.
And you can look outside the box and you can mash anything together.
That's what's good about music. Limits. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Fun stuff. Do you have any other gear that you guys absolutely love in the studio that you would like to share? Maybe it could be speakers, it could be instruments, it could be synthesizer plugins. Anything else that stands out that you're like, oh, this is a must have if you guys don't have this yet?
The Empirical Labs distressors are pretty awesome pieces of analog gear.
Yeah.
I mean, good set of speakers. We always tend to go towards the Genelex or the classic Yamaha, you know, studio set. I'm trying to think of what else we use in here.
Like looking around.
Just looking around. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, we can just look at your, we'll just look at your Instagram and see what you're playing with.
We just give you a tour.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. If anybody is just listening to this on audio, they're sitting in their studio, like in front of an SSL like console, and they have a bunch of cool stuff there. So we'll put some of those pictures up.
I think also a piano is really, really handy to have. So just to get down ideas, if that's usually how we start a song. It's either on the piano or the guitar. But having a piano, I mean, it's
yeah, amazing. to work things out. Yeah, harmonies, melodies.
And maybe that's just us because we're all classically trained and that's our number one instrument that we always go back to. But it is handy for us to have a piano.
Yeah. Yeah, I do hear that a lot too. People start off on piano, no matter what genre they're doing.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, this was great stuff so far, guys. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge. It's super valuable, especially for somebody who hasn't been where you've been, you know? So,
we appreciate it. I mean, maybe we take it for granted, but I mean, it always seems like even when you're in it, you don't think about it all the time, what you're doing. And it's nice to sit back and just think about what you're doing sometimes, right?
Yeah, and see how much you've done, for sure.
See how old you are now.
Yeah, right. I know. That's the one bad thing about it, but hey, it happens. Is there any parting words that you guys would like to share with our listeners before we end off? Something that, last lesson, guys, we would just like to tell you this. Here's some good advice that maybe you could take with you and do better.
I think, I don't know, guys. Always writing, practicing your writing is critical, right? Just working on songs as a craft and your melodies and stuff. Hooks are so important. Like just working on that. I mean, the music's the most important part.
Mm-hmm. And I think don't take it too seriously. A lot of times the best things happen when you're not even expecting it. And if you're trying too hard, you're almost forcing it. Let it happen.
Being a producer, I think you need to try to be a songwriter as well. It helps in the studio when as a musician, if you can rely on your producer for those notes on this melody, maybe we should go this way or we should bring this hook back in here again. You know what I mean? Like that stuff is so critical to the formation of a song.
Yeah, I see. That's great. Ryan, do you have anything you want to say before we end up?
Well, it kind of going off that, like the less is more is important, I think. Like,
We used to do more.
Yeah, we used to do more, and then we would slowly get better at doing less. And it's like when if George Harrison or John Lennon just hit a couple chords on the guitar, like that to me is a better guitar player hitting those right notes than doing a like 200 note solo like that. Yeah. There's no comparison to me. And just having that simplistic approach is by far the best. It's more memorable for sure too when you're listening to music. So
yeah, I see. Now that's great advice. Well, guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really fun. I hope I jogged some pleasant memories in your head. You guys think back now.
It was nice to reminisce.
yeah, totally. Well, I wish you guys a continued success and then maybe, you know, a couple years or so, come back on the show and tell us about, tell us some more stories.
Yeah, we'd love to. It was great. Great talking
Thanks
to you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, everybody listening, that's going to be it for today's episode. Before we do that, can you guys share where people could find out more about you and hear your stuff?
Brothersofficialmusic.com. That'll lead you to our Instagram and anywhere you need to go, to find our music.
Awesome. So definitely go check that out. And that's going to be it for today's episode of the EDM Producer Podcast. See you guys later.